All right. So this is Tracy Zemyska, and I am here with Michael Ingram today. And Michael is a yoga teacher and just recently certified Thai yoga massage therapist, which is an amazing thing if you guys have never done that before. And I'm sure he'll talk about that too. But I just wanted to ask Michael to be a part of this because not only is he one of my very good friends who I've known for a really long time, but we kind of did our yoga journeys nearly at the same time, if I remember correctly. And we also both have our Reiki masters. So we've kind of, you know, followed the same path without ever meaning to. And then, you know, still together now doing what we love and trying to, I guess, just make the world a better place in our own ways. So, Michael, I wanted just to, you know, introduce, he is located in Cleveland, Ohio, and is also available for privates and Thai yoga massage, and his contact information is going to be in the comments. So certainly if you feel a connection to him and his story and what he has to offer, feel free to reach out and contact him. And with that, I will turn it over to you. Now, if you want to start with when you started practicing, why you started practicing, what yoga means to you.
Well, first, hi, Tracy. Nice to talk to you. Yoga means so much to me. You know, it means everything and nothing at the same time. Exactly. So yoga is a part of my life, a part of my practice, something that I forget to do, something that reminds me of being human. Yoga is just everything to me. I try to remember that it's just not being on the mat. A lot of people think that yoga is just the asana, touching your toes, you know, being able to go into crow. But yoga is really a metaphor for just life and how there's struggles and whatnot. So I came to the mat maybe when I was 18, which is sort of young. And I I came to the mat because I thought, you know, this is a physical practice. I want to stand on my head. I want to, you know, have one leg in the air and the other leg to the side and running man. I just wanted that physical practice. And then it was like, boom, it hit me in the face. This physical practice turned into this emotional roller coaster. And, you know, it's like a relationship. Yoga in my life has been like a relationship. Sometimes it's really good. Sometimes I don't even want to see it. Mm-hmm. But that's what I think makes me be able to relate with my students sometimes. And, you know, the hardest part about the asana, getting on the mat, is just getting there, being present, because all that chit, that C-H-I-T, comes up, and it just really blows your mind. But and then I took the seat as the teacher. I was so lucky to be able to take the seat as the teacher and learn so much more from my students and friends who have become, you know, my students and whatnot. So like I said, yoga is a part of my life and every aspect, just not on the mat. And it's really even bigger than being on the mat. It goes into my career, working with children, my massage now, sending love and compassion, which is, you know, one of the sutras, ahimsa, nonviolence, and just speaking my truth, what I'm doing right now with you.
So do you feel like you can, you know, see changes within yourself and your life since your practice has shifted from just being just a practitioner? And I don't mean it in like a that you've become better now because you're a teacher in any way, but, you know, certainly taking a yoga teacher training, whether you plan on being a teacher or not, deepens your practice pretty significantly.
Right.
So do you notice, like, did you see this huge shift from in your personal life and in your professional life as you went through that process? Or do you feel like a lot of your yoga growth happened before you became a teacher?
So, you know, the thing that I've found with yoga is the more that you think you know, the less you really do know.
Mm-hmm.
So I just sort of like surrender to the things that are around me now, which I guess is a practice in itself, letting go of things that bother you, letting go of not being able to stand in tree pose, you know. So I think it did evolve more so during my teacher training when I was exposed to not only my body, but 23 other people that I got to learn through and see, like, some people will never be able to do this posture, or some people are so bendy, and I, you know, look across the room and think like, oh, they're so bendy, right? But mm-hmm. what I have to remember is that they sometimes wish they had a body like me, which was more muscular, could be able to do more handstands and different things like that. So the more that I practice, the more that I learn that, you know, it's less about the actual practice, like I said before, and mm-hmm. really about that realization that you just have to let go. And when you let go, that's when all of the beautiful things come up. And so the thing about being a teacher is the things that I tell my students, I really have to learn. The Buddha says you teach what you need to learn. So really it's me teaching myself the things that I need. And when I teach a class, it's 9 times out of 10 things that I want to see. And then my students, you know, really resonate with those things too, because we talk about what we want to do and how we want to approach different things and whatnot. And most of my students come for the physical benefit, and then they're blown away like I have by the spiritual aspect of yoga.
Mm-hmm. Now, one thing that I want to point out about the way that you kind of have approached teaching, which is oftentimes not necessarily the normal or the normal path that people take, you do not teach in any studios, and you've never really taught a consistent right. on the schedule class anywhere. And why did you decide not to do that? Like, why did you choose not to be a part of a studio and instead just go into people's homes? And I know you work a lot with Yoga Reach, if you want to talk about them too. You know, we work with them.
So I think I might have had this conversation with you about having students in your class. I had taken mm-hmm. my teacher training after you, and I know you had sometimes said, like, oh, I wish I had more students in my class and whatnot. And I remember you telling me about one of your teachers who told you, the people who need to be there will be there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've always just had students that have come to me, and I teach 4 privates a week. And one of the privates started as 3 ladies, and now it's up to 11. And mm-hmm. it's more about having fun. Why don't I teach in a studio? Because, like yoga, it's flexible. I have to be flexible with my schedule. And being in a certain place on a certain day every week sometimes doesn't always work for me. And my students are open to changing times and mm-hmm. changing locations sometimes. So it just me better for my full-time job and allows me not to leave students hanging at a studio and having a sub and whatnot. So mm-hmm. that's just the path that I've gone down. And I don't know if I would be opposed to teaching at a studio, but at this time, you know, it's great. My privates, I see them once or twice a week. I have a woman who I see twice a week, and, mm-hmm. you know, I can see the growth in her, and we have a great time together.
Great.
And also the other thing about not teaching in a studio is sometimes in the middle of a class, we want to stand up and do something different and, mm-hmm. you know, maybe take a walk outside. That's all yoga. And right. If you're in a studio, there's a little bit more of constraints that you have to adhere to.
Yeah, for sure.
So.
For sure. And, I mean, I would like to point out, too, like a lot of places in the country, the market that you work in is really competitive, and it's very sort of like numbers driven. And I think it's a lot harder to find a space, you know, one consistent space that really works for you and speaks to you as a teacher sometimes. So, and then
I take my space everywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
I take my space to my students.
Right. And then also, you know, your work with Yoga Reach, if you want to talk about what they do and how you got started in that and maybe some of the lessons that you've learned from teaching.
Sure.
It's a really unique population that you, I don't know that you necessarily were exposed to that sort of training.
No.
And so I think it's been a really cool, you know, learning experience for you.
Right. So I was really blessed to, after my teacher training, I was talking to my teacher, Marnie Task, and she said, you should really check out this group of yoga teachers that teach special needs students in the population at different community centers. So I looked it up online, and it just so happened that the director of Yoga Reach, Char Grossman, and I had been practicing together. We had lost contact for maybe 10 years or so, but we had started practicing together 10 years ago or, you know, 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, it was just meant to be. And I emailed her, sent her my picture, and she immediately remembered me. And so now I'm blessed every Monday. I teach in Solon at the Solon Community Center, and I teach to special needs yogis. And really, our whole point of teaching to this population is really to let them know that, yeah, they are part of the special needs population, but they're a part of a larger population of yogis who are all across the world in every, you know, makeup and different things like that. And so it's really about socialization with them. We get a lot of poses in, and it's just having fun. And they're really the true barometer of my teaching. They'll tell me things sometimes like, why did we do that? And I have to think like, yeah, why did we do that? And so they're the best students because they don't have a filter, and that's not mm-hmm. a bad thing. They just don't some of my students sometimes want to candy coat things and, you know, not tell me when I'm giving them good teaching direction and whatnot. Those students will let me know, yeah, this did not land and it didn't make sense to me. And so that's really helped me to become a better teacher with my languaging as far as getting things across. Because sometimes I think I have the best sequence or the best languaging, and really, it really doesn't land or resonate with anybody. You know, it might just mm-hmm. land and resonate with me. And that is not what a good teacher. A good teacher can speak to any group of people and be able to get across the message or the posture or whatever. And so at Yoga Reach, we also work with Parkinson's patients and aging seniors. And so if you want to check them out, I'm sure Tracy will put in my bio or link that she's going to put up Yoga Reach's website. And we're at community centers as well as we're inside of InMotion, which is for Parkinson's patients in the Cleveland area. And it's free to them.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So I never really like asking these, you know, questions, I guess, but because everything changes all the time anyways. But, you know, where do you feel like you want to focus? I know that you just took your or got your Thai yoga certification. So is that where you're moving more into, like, movement therapy? Or kind of what was your inspiration for going and getting your Thai yoga massage?
So sometimes when people hear the word yoga, they're totally turned off and, oh, I can't touch my toes. Or when I say I'm a Reiki master, oh, that's too, you know, that's too up in the universe for me. So, you know,
right.
everyone can relate to massage. And so it's just really another vehicle for me to reach different clients and the clients that I already have. So it's a more well-rounded approach to what I think I do, which is really just to hold space with my students. Maybe we're going to do massage this week. Maybe we need to do Reiki. Maybe we're going to do yoga. You know, we just have a lot of options that we can work with. So it's really just holding space with my students and allowing them to tell me what they need and giving them different tools to try to live their best life.
Awesome. And if you had any advice for somebody who wanted to become a yoga teacher, what would you tell them?
I would tell them to really just soak up that 9 months or 200 hours that you that you're taking with your teacher. Really just listen to what they have to say and practice, practice, practice. And know when you graduate with 200 hours, that doesn't mean that you have to teach 30 classes a week. Start off small. Build a population, practice with those people that you love and different things like that. And then you'll find your voice and all of the kinks and things will work out. And, you know, sometimes even when I make the biggest mistakes in class, those are the things that help me to be real to my students. And that's what I think they admire most about me. When I forget, oh, yeah, we have to do the left side, and they'll remind me. So not only for me, not only for me is that great because I'm like, wow, they're really engaged in this, but also it shows them like I'm just some yoga teacher. Really at the end of the day, it's really about their practice and whatnot. Mm-hmm. I'm just there to facilitate some ideas. Really, they need to do what their body tells them. And really, that's my goal with all my students. I'll give you some suggestions, but you tell me, you know what your body needs the most. And that's really what yoga is about. Yoga is about body awareness.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that there's always this discussion, and I know that you and I have talked about it before, especially with the commercialization or the westernization, whatever you want to call it, of yoga, that people kind of get caught up in this whole Lululemon, hot, Bikram craze, and that it takes away from, you know, the practice itself and helping people. What do you think about that? Like, do you feel like there's an issue there? Do you struggle with getting paid for something that is such a, I guess, innately personal, you know, situation? Like, what do you feel about that?
Well, you know, I feel like anything that brings people in the door for yoga is, you know, great. I mean, I came in the door because I wanted a physical practice. And then, mm-hmm. boom, it hit me in the face. This spiritual practice takes over. And then you really start contemplating every part of your life. And maybe you even start contemplating that practice that you took in. And, you know, at first you're pushing to go into the splits. And then you're telling yourself, like, it doesn't really matter if I go into the splits. Let me use all these beautiful props or these, you know, pillows or whatever. And that is so much more enjoyable. I think that's what comes with practice. As far as, you know, the commercialization of yoga, you know, I think that's anything in our society, anything that changes lives. We want to make that the number one thing and tell everyone that they have to do it. So like I said, you know, I feel like yoga is a relationship that I've had, you know, and sometimes I don't even want to look at it. Sometimes mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, my God, you're the best person ever. Come around me. And then other times I'm like, ugh, don't even talk about yoga right now.
Right.
And then I really think that's the journey of yoga. Anyone who tells you, like, oh, yeah, I get on my mat every single day and I love it and everything like that, to a certain extent, that is great. But I think they really haven't broke through that emotional boundary, because sometimes you hate it.
Yeah, it's sort of bullshit, I think, when people are like, oh.
That's what yoga is about.
Right.
But one thing that I've learned through yoga is, like, whatever comes on your mat, like, I'm going to deal with being pissed right now. I'm going to deal with it, be pissed. And then 30 minutes from now, I could be happy because I lived that truth right then and let it go. If you
right.
suppress it, and this is just not on the mat, this is in life. If you suppress it, it follows you for 30 years then. And you don't even remember why you are so upset. So that's
right.
really something that I've learned with yoga and friends in my life, that I have to let that feeling come up, feel it, and then let it go, you know. So, you know, yoga is big business in America, and there's people who really play into that, and, you know, you just have to send them blessings, and if it speaks to some people, that's great. You know, my classes don't speak to everyone, and
right.
And that's okay. I have, as a teacher, as a student, I've been in classes that haven't spoke to me, and I've thought, okay, well, I'm just going to honor this teacher for what they're saying. It doesn't resonate with me, and I might not be able to come back to this class, but that's okay, because it might have spoke to 30 other people who have packed the room and wanted to hear everything he or she has to say.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think that there's definitely I do struggle sometimes with when I think that teachers, and you know this because I've talked to you about this before, I had a situation with a teacher that I loved, and I thought that she was just the most amazing thing in the world. And,
right.
You know, the more that I got to know her outside of the studio, the more I felt uncomfortable
yeah.
with the stuff that she would say in class. And it was really,
mm-hmm.
I left one of her classes in the middle of class once because I just couldn't
mm-hmm.
even handle what I was hearing, and I was upset that I did that. You know, I mean, I wanted to try to stick it out, but I just couldn't stay there any longer. And I think that, you know, I think it can be hard, and there's definitely a fine line when you become friends. I have several friends who are very good friends of mine that I met through teaching, and they
mm-hmm.
became, you know, really good friends and a big part of my life. But I always worry about that relationship because to me, the relationship for teacher-student, it's not about me or my life. Like, you don't need to know the details of my life. Like, I'm here to hold space for you. And I think it can be difficult. Like, we've definitely, I was just talking to somebody the other day about how there is this sort of thing that happens where yoga teachers can sometimes create a really awful codependent relationship with their students and convince them that they're not safe in other people's classes or that they can only go to the studio that person teaches at or whatever. And it's, you know, all this sort of like fear mongering that goes on. And I think that, you know, and you and I have had, I think maybe once or twice, a disagreement and we were able to talk about it and, you know, be really real with each other and heartfelt and vulnerable. And we were able to have this connection. And I think it's because we're both yoga teachers.
Yeah.
And, you know, and maybe you know, it wouldn't have worked out that way.
Right. The one thing that I have to say about my teacher, Marnie, who, you know, I love and send blessings to, she puts herself out there like, I'm a real person. She tells us, she would tell us in teacher training, like, don't eat meat because I don't tell you to. Eat meat or don't eat meat because you don't want to, you know? And she said, every single day I'm struggling with not eating meat, you know? And so that's what made her real. It's those teachers that say like, oh yeah, I get up at 3 a.m, I meditate, I only eat organic food. I never have any bad thoughts about people.
Right.
And, you know, those are what I think as Westerners, we want to put our teacher on a pedestal. We want to make that teacher so grandiose and whatnot, when we really are all just human. We make mistakes. Sometimes we say things that are not nice, but it's really how we deal with those things afterwards where the yoga comes into play, you know, where, you know, you might say something nasty or something and then you catch yourself and you know, like, yeah, that's really not yoga-like. That's really not the type of person that I want to be. And so that's really where the yoga comes into be. And, you know, as Westerners, we want to have that guru, right? That person who takes us from dark to light. And what we forget is that, like, your guru could be that person in your life that's shown you a path that you don't want to go down. Like, hey, yeah, I do not want to go down this path. Thank you for showing me that that's not the type of person I want to be. So, you know, in my classes at the end, I always say, like, let's send out some blessings to the teachers in our life. Teachers don't mean that, you know, they had to teach us ABC 1, 2, 3 or the split. Those teachers are ex-boyfriends, ex-girlfriends who said, like, who have shown us a path that, yeah, we don't want to go down that because it doesn't let us live our authentic self.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's what I think we struggle with in, you know, America and whatnot, is that we want to find that person who's going to save us, who's going to make us whole. When a lot of people come to yoga who are broken, and there's some teachers who say yoga is going to save your life, and people say yoga has saved their lives. And, you know, to a certain extent, that's true. It can, but it's really just a tool. It's a tool that helps you deal with things that are going on in your life. So I'm always leery when I hear people say, like, yoga is the thing that has saved me. But yoga can be a tool. It can be an amazing tool, and we just have to remember that.
Yeah. What do you think is the biggest thing that yoga has helped you with, like, in terms of maybe overcoming something or dealing with issues or anything like that? Like, what do you credit yoga for doing for you? Because, like you said, most teachers especially will say, yoga saved my life. And, I mean, you hear that all the time, and you hear it from students too, but often teachers' stories are that they were in some random place that didn't make sense to them, and they found yoga, and then suddenly they had direction, and, you know, luckily they found yoga instead of something else, but I do think all of us come to the mat for a reason, and we keep coming back for a reason.
Yeah. Right.
So, like, what's your reason? Like, why do you, you know, what has this helped you change in your life? Or how are you different than the way that you were before yoga?
When I get on that mat and I'm, you know, I have to say, when I'm, like, totally in my practice, because I can get on the mat and not, and be elsewhere, you know, and there's a lot of people that do that, and that's okay, because that's a physical practice, and that's fine. But being on my mat, moving with my breath, that allows me to let go of everything else that's going on in my life and really just focus on what I'm doing right now. And it gets rid of that chit that I talked about, C-H-I-T, that craziness in the head. And that allows me to just know that, like, really at the end of the day, it's really not the end of the world when I'm thinking about someone caught me off in traffic or someone hit me head on or, you know, this person in my life gave me a dirty look or my boss is not nice to me. It's really not that big of a deal. And that's what yoga showed me. Like, it's shown me the things in my life that really do matter. And, you know, not to sweat the little things and really just to embrace where I am. And also, you know, it really has helped me through my Reiki too and my yoga that, like, the universe will provide for you if you just believe in it. And that's what yoga is too. Yoga allows you to connect with, it's not a religion, but it allows you to connect to a higher being, that higher self, your inner guru. And that's what yoga's really done to me, allowed me to have that space to breathe and just be present right now on my mat. I tend to be a fixer in my life. I want to fix everyone, like, oh, if you did this, this would be better, this or that. And I forget that I have to focus really on myself. And how narcissistic to think that I could really fix anyone other than myself.
Well, I mean, I think it's also like an avoidance thing, you know, like it's easy to avoid our own problems if we're focusing on somebody else's.
Right. I could tell you all the things in the world to do, but then when I have to do them, it gets crazy and I'm like, have anxiety. So that's what yoga's done for me. You know, I'm appreciative of that. And I try to remember that even if I'm on my mat for an hour and a half and, you know, most of it has been me fidgeting and whatnot. If I could get 5 or 10 minutes, at least I got that clarity for 5 or 10 minutes. And that's, I really think you just have to remember those small things too. Like, you know, okay, so I was able to concentrate in meditation for 2 minutes. That's two more minutes than I would have, you know, not have if I wouldn't have gotten on my mat.
Right. Awesome. Well, I know you have to get back to work because you are a full-time worker in addition to being a yoga teacher and a healer.
Yes.
And I really appreciate you being with us. And again, all of Michael's contact information will be in the comments if you have any questions and you want to contact him or you just everything just that he said maybe resonated with you. And then also to information about Yoga Reach and the work that they do. If you're interested in participating in that, he can also, you know, talk to you on that end. But I just want
to,
again...
Totally reach out to me. Totally reach out to me if you feel like anything is resonating with you. Or if you think everything that I'm saying is crazy, reach out to me and let me know that too. I'm open to that, right?
It's always nice to have a dialogue, right?
Right, exactly.
But thanks again so much for joining me. And we will... be back for another episode soon.
Thank you.